find there were many questions from right, many of you regarding this method. There was some misconception. So I thought maybe I should give a talk about this. All that I'm going to discuss, 99% of it is covered in this book, and it's very well written. So if you want to look further into the MRG MPS, matrix product state, even time-dependent DMRG and Nachos method, you should look into this book. It's very well written, and it's very nicely detailed with some examples in it. So, okay. I will not cite this again in the rest of the presentation, but this is cited for the entire presentation. I've used many figures in this book. Okay. So, I will try to introduce or motivate why numerics, why do we care about doing simulations to begin with. Then I will introduce the complexity that is arised by interacting models. I will give an example of Hubbard model and the limitations that are there because of the complexity and Hilbert space going on very quickly with number of systems. These problems led to discovery of Wilson's renormalization group, which introduced the idea of first time the truncation was done in order to reach some low energy properties of a model algorithm. And then finally, White came along and fixed the problems in Wilson's renormalization group and introduced the MRG. I'll discuss the algorithm and its limitations in here, and I will have a few applications that I will talk about. Throughout this talk, please stop me anytime if you have any questions or confusion. But please feel free to ask. So, why numerics? First of all, because a lot of these ideas and are introduced by exactly solvable models. Like, for example, Hubbard model in 1D is exactly solvable. But the point of using numerics is we can test those ideas and concepts and either reject them or prove them using numerics. Another thing is many of the model that we want to study now are not even solvable analytically exactly. Right? So for example, one of the biggest questions that is there superconductivity that simply comes about from the Hubbard model? Can Hubbard model describe superconductivity that we see in superrays, which is D-wave superconductivity? So these are the questions that are important that needs to be addressed, and they are still topic of intense research today using various methods. And finally, to discover new phases, a lot of time we just want to do various parameter sweeps and see if there are new phases that come about, and what is its origin, can we use it for something, and etc. And finally, if none of these are convincing, to do something and spend the grant money that is given to spend the computation. This at least according to Peter. Okay. So let me start by giving an example of what I just said in the motivation. So this is, we're not here. So look, concentrate over here first. For 1D Hubbard model chain, this model is exactly solvable. And one of the prediction that was given by analytics is spin charge separation, for example. And it was shown that through some transformation, then you can write the Hubbard model exactly as a product of spin part and charge part. And if you calculate the velocity of these, they have a different velocity in real space. One of the proof that came in support of this idea was from Harpez. But this is the MRG simulation I'm showing to support this idea, this concept that analytics showed us. So here I have results for Hubbard model. In the ground state, it is slightly away from half-filling. So it is a metallic system, it's not a model insulator. And here I'm plotting charge occupation and spin density at various sites. So at time zero, I apply a hole pocket, so I remove a chunk of electron from the system, and I let the system propagate in time. And you can see after some time, the charge packet, which is the black curve, is slightly faster than the spin packet. This is a very visual and clear representation of spin charge separation. Now, I also say, well, we can go beyond what analytics can give us. Right? So this is an example of going beyond. Here, very similar idea, but I'm showing like a heterostructure, where the left-hand side is a Mott insulator, so half of the lattice on the left-hand side is a Mott insulator, and the right-hand side is a normal metal, represented by tight binding. There's a hole pocket that is created at time equal to zero, just like in this case. Now, in the normal metal, there is no spin charge separation. This is an interaction. So here, both packets will propagate together. But when it hits the phase boundary, you see the spin packet goes through like nothing happened, while the charge part, which is the red curve, is reflected back. So we can play some really cool game here with time-dependent energy. So this is just one example. There are, of course, many examples in literature that I can show. But hopefully this was motivation enough for the medical solutions. So now,
there's a good scheme that's doing game analogy for in dynamics?
Yes, for 1D system, yes. It works relatively well for ladder system, a couple of legs attached together as well. But this is the simplest example I could find with time-dependent game analogy. Okay, so now here, let me motivate or highlight the difference between non-interacting versus interacting model and why things become so difficult for interacting model simulations, right? We have all at some point done tight binding Hamiltonian in our classes. And we know that if I simply Fourier transform this Hamiltonian, which simply takes an electron from some site J to some site I, then I will have a diagonal representation and I can diagonalize it excellently. Numerically, you realize that, well, this is a non-interacting problem. So I can simply do one electron problem, just like hydrogen atom. And the basis that you can use to represent this model is simply single particle basis. So if you have four sites, the bases are simply one electron on each site. So there are only four bases. If you have 2 spin degree of freedom, then it's 2 times the number of sites. And this is easily diagonalizable. You can take your N to 100 or 200 or 1000, and you can blindly give it to a Lopak routine, and it will do the diagonalization for you. So now, this is easy to solve. We come to interacting problem. Now we have terms here where electrons are interacting. So you have C dagger, and CC like terms. And then you really need to consider multi-particle bases. That means you need to consider that on each side there is 4 possibility. You have no electron, you have up, down, or up, down. So for n side problem, the Hilbert space is 4 to the n power. 4 on each side, and you have n number of sides. So these are some of the bases that I'm drawing here. There are much more, where you can have a variety of things on each side. You can have 1 electron, 2 electrons, or no electrons. And you can, now if you see that for 8 sites already, the Hilbert space is 65,000. Lopak routine will not diagonalize this, at least you will be very old when it actually gets the job done. And going beyond this is probably not reasonable at this point. There are power law methods, like Lanczos, that can do better, but even with those, the maximum number of sites for Hubbard model is about 16. And you can play some tricks and get to 20. But that's about it. There's not much better you can do with exact diagonalization. So this was the motivation to develop better method that can control this blowing up of Hilbert space properly. So one idea that you might consider is that, well, clearly this is a problem. ED has a small system size limit, as I just explained. I'm not going into quantum Monte Carlo, but I think we have all heard at some point that there is a sign problem at zero temperature. So how do we reduce this complexity? And you would think that, well, most of the time, we're only interested in the low-lying energy states, the low energy excitations of the system. So I could say that from my eigenstates, maybe if there's a way to simply cut out these high energy states, then I can represent a model with only low energy degrees of freedom. Right? So this is what Wilson did, and this is his RFD, the Refinement Reduces. So this is how that is done. This is not a DMRG yet, but this is Wilson's renormalization group. So, and Wilson's renormalization group idea was to minimize the energy problem, which is slightly different from DMRG. But I'll get to that. So example, how do we actually do this if we wanted to do this? So I will take an example of Heisenberg Hamiltonian. I think most of us are familiar. If you're not, just ask me. But this is a two-site Heisenberg problem. So you have spin-spin correlation between two sites. And the ground state of this two-site problem is just the singlet. S equal to 0, SD equal to 0 ground state. So we start with two-site Hamiltonian that we build. And the Hilbert space in multiple particle basis is this. It's up, up, down, down, and up, down, down, up, etc. We diagonalize the Hamiltonian because we want to get this set of eigenstates exactly. And then the way we perform truncation is here. So when we diagonalize, we will get these eigenvectors written as columns of the U dagger and U, or column here and row there, etc. The way we truncate is we simply throw away the eigenvectors corresponding to these high energy states. So this U eigenvector matrix goes from being a square matrix to a rectangle because we threw away some information. And then, now because you threw away states, you need to represent rest of the system in the correct basis. You cannot write Hamiltonian in the original basis because you threw away part of it. So the way to do that is doing this rotation. So once you have the U and U dagger matrices that are truncated like this, then you simply do the rotation like this. So this is a rectangular matrix, square matrix, and rectangular matrix. And if you go through this, you will, at the end of the day, get a square matrix here. Okay. So for example, if you threw away, if the states you keep here is M, then at the end of the day, the operators should be M by M matrices, all the operators. So we go from the original space in O to truncated M by M matrix. That's how you perform truncation. And we will use the same method also in the image. And finally, you just simply add one more site. You had originally two sites. Then you add one more site, go back to this, diagonalize, get the U and U daggers, truncate, rotate, you add one more site, and continue in the cycle. So let me just focus a little bit here in the last step. How do you add a site? So originally you had two sites. So this is a vectorial representation. And you want to add a site to it. So this new Hilbert space is truncated H and SZ, S plus and S minus. Within this block is a small M by M matrices because you truncated them here. Yeah. So these are M by M matrices, and then you want to add one site, so you have to do Kronecker product with identity of two, Hilbert space two, because local site has two states per site. If you were doing Hubbard models, then you would do identity of four, four by four matrix. All right, so I will continue here, but we are still not at the MRG. Yes.
So this is the prescription of acting as site.
Yes, that's right.
So you, so S of Z, but oh, I see, so S of Z plus and minus is the normalized one. So
that's right. So these tilde operators belong to this yellow box, and this one is what we're adding.
I see. So it's in fact a 2x2 column.
Right. Okay. So these guys are 2x2 polymers. Mm-hmm. S plus, S minus, S. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then when you have N sites, the coupling is not nearest neighbor. When you add a site at the end, the coupling is with SV of the entire chain. So you, at every step you have a two-site Hamiltonian.
So what you do is you keep growing this, right?
Yes.
And that, yes, so you have SC at every bond, but that information is contained here. you only add the link. So this is only the connection that you add between the yellow and the fresh light. And this is the original Hamiltonians of this yellow block. So it contains all those links within that.
So SD tilde I minus 1 is the I minus 1 is site 1 and site
yes.
rotated.
Yes.
Okay. It's not the total SD of the entire chain.
No, it's not.
Okay.
So SD I minus 1 is the SD operator living on this site, but it has to be represented in the Hilbert space of this yellow block. On top of that, it is truncated. It is renormalized.
So how do I still guarantee the rotational symmetry? So one can prove that even you truncated, the rotational symmetry is still there, or you just impose it. That's the case. Because once I remove the stay,
you'll lose that symmetry in the sense.
But this still insists on in the way that I add a site, right? When you add a site, you still insist on rotational symmetry of the effective spin with the fair spin of that, right?
When you say rotation, you talk about SU2 symmetry?
SU2 symmetry, yeah.
But I think that is still preserved here.
Okay. Well, it's just not obvious to me that since you remove a state,
right.
and that state actually in the original Hamiltonian, that state also accessed this little spin, right?
Yeah, but in the sense,
the additional spin.
When you create the Hamiltonian here, you will see that you can still block diagonalize the Hamiltonian. In the sense, each SD sector will form a different block. So you're not losing that symmetry. In the sense, yeah, you might.
I'm not concerned about the SD symmetry, but it's a full rotational symmetry that you're insisting here. But it's SU2 for me. It's full rotation of this composite object. Right. And you still have a high symmetry form.
Right.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Never mind. We can proceed to get discussed.
So I guess if you have a two-site Hamiltonian, you have four states, out of which there will be a singlet and a triplet.
Yeah.
So if you keep only the singlet and one of the triplet, then you are losing some symmetry. So is it that you have to keep all four or just the singlet or something like that?
I wouldn't call it losing the symmetry because you can still. You have only a singlet and a triplet, you can still block diagonalize the Hamiltonian. It's just you might not have all the SD sectors. You might have thrown away part of the SD sector.
Mm-hmm. So if you throw away some of the degenerate SD eigenstates, aren't you getting rid of full SU2 symmetry and just restricting yourself to SD conservation now?
What I'm trying to say is that you can still target a specific sector if we are using symmetries. So in that sense, that is still there. But I understand your point that because you're throwing away some states, it's like originally you had three states which are in triplet sector, but now you only have one. So you broke the SU2 symmetry. But that's true, but you can still target a specific sector because your block Hamiltonian can still be blocked diagonally. Right, so I'm not sure about terminology.
If you're targeting a specific sector, do you need to keep all the states within that sector when you take a low energy truncation?
So I'm not exactly sure how that's done in Wilson's renormalization group. I can touch with you when we get to the emerging. I have done that there, so I can answer you. Okay. So here we use this kind of Roach scheme in Wilson's renormalization. And you can use various Roach schemes. This is just the one that is easiest, so I'm showing you here. So Wilson's renormalization group is a way to minimize the energy because you're working on the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian, right? DMRG is a way to minimize the information, maximize the information. So there is a slight difference between the two. And that's what you want to think about when you think of the difference between the two. Wilson's renormalization group perform poorly for most of the interacting models. In some rare cases, like Kondo problem and Anderson impurity problem, it worked well. So there was clearly a problem here. This was solved by White, so we will go to that now. So this was the idea that essentially that drove the MRG algorithm. We can always write the ground state of any model Hamiltonian as a linear combination of the basis states, right? And the AI that are associated with these configuration are just the probabilities associated with that configuration assigned. And if I plot this as a for all the values of AI in the decreasing order, you will see this kind of a profile, where the most probability is associated with a few states, as few configuration, right? So you can simply make a cut here and say I'm going to throw away all these configurations which are not contributing to my ground state. But then White asked that, can we perform some rotation using some matrices that we don't know yet to get this kind of a profile, such that when I cut here, the error is far smaller. Yeah. So these AI are probabilities. So if I sum over them, I should have one. The probability distribution. So I can measure the error of my truncation by seeing how much I threw away. And clearly here you have a long tail, you're gonna have large error versus in this case. So this is the pictorial representation that drove the idea that we want to rotate into some basis where the ground state is represented by a small number of configurations. And these will be some rotated configuration, and I have no classical analog of that. Because after rotation, I have no clue how these will look like. Okay. So before I jump to the DMRG algorithm, let me say a little bit about density matrices and what they are. So you can define a density matrix of a state like this, right? So if you write this down, you will see that this is a matrix, right? This is a diagonal matrix, row, with diagonals being that these AIs, square, actually. So these are just some probabilities associated with the configuration. That's all there. So you want to think of density matrix as some probability matrix associated with some configuration of this. Now, we will often look at this bipartite system, where we will not look at the density matrix, but we will look at reduced density matrix. Is there a ruler?
Oh, there's a pointer somewhere.
Yeah, they,
no? Oh, right
there. There's a pointer, it's not working well.
So here, we will often look at bipartite system for DMRG. That's just the growth scheme that tend to work better for numerical simulations. I'll get to it why later. But if you have a bipartite system like this, then you can represent the ground state of the of any model using this, where the index di belongs to the system and j belongs to the environment. I can always write it in that manner. Actually, that is just a smidge decomposition of this guy, if you think about it. And the reduced density matrix we calculate by simply, if you want the reduced density matrix of A, then we need to trace over degrees of freedom in B. And if you go through this algebra, you will find that you simply have to contract over the second index, which refers to the B partition, to get the reduced density matrix. And these have some nice properties. It's Hermitian, so the eigenvalues are real. Additionally, because these are some probabilities distribution, as I motivated here, they have to always add up to one. So they are real and positive. And the trace equals to unity, and eigenvectors form an orthogonal basis. Okay. So this is what we're going to use to form a rotation in the MRG simulation. Again, because at this point, we will not truncate using the eigenvectors, we are truncating using these probabilities that are associated with some configuration of the system, right? So there's a slight difference between Wilson's renormalization group and the MRG. And the problem we're doing is we want to minimize this error here by doing some rotation. All right. So now I will go to infinite MRG algorithm, and this is not the IDMRG that people often tend to use in literature today. Slightly, this was the original DMRG, infinite DMRG that White introduced. IDMRG is slightly, there are a few more steps here and there, but it's mostly safe, more or less. Okay, so just like Wilson's generalization group, here we will start with, so there I give two side examples, but here we will start with one side Hamiltonian, one side Heisenberg model, for example. But in Heisenberg model, we have no local term, so the Hamiltonian for one side is zero. There are only correlation between psi and energy. And the local operators are just spin 1/2 polymatrices for one side. And the one side Hilbert space is two because you can have up electron or down. Okay. Then we add one side, just as we did in the Wilson's normalization group. But here we're going to perform two additions. First, we're going to take one side and add first side to the right. And then we're going to add first side to the left. And with a very similar concept I introduced before. But here, because you're adding to the right, you have this identity on the right-hand side. Here, you're adding to the left, so you have to be careful to put identity on the left-hand side. So just be consistent with that. And looking at the dimensions, for example, if you're not truncating, this has two side Hilbert space. You're adding another two states to the Hilbert space. So overall, all the matrices for this left block should be 4x4, and same over there. Then we want to combine the two, the left and the right block, to form the so-called super block. That's the terminology. And again, or this is now 4x4 Hilbert space, and we're combining two of them, so the final matrix that we should get should be 16x16. And the way you do that is very similar to before. You take the Hamiltonian of the left-hand side, with multiply by identity of the right-hand side. So this is dr times 2 is actually 4. Okay. So this is 4x4 for the left, 4x4 for the right. So you should have 16x16 matrix. And again, this is a Kronecker product. It's not a multiplication. You do the same thing here. Now you do the opposite. You take the Hamiltonian of the right, multiply by the identity. This is just so you're going up the Hilbert space, right? You need to go to the correct Hilbert space for four-side model. And then you form all the connections between the two. So these are the connections between the two, where SDI plus 1 and SDI plus 2, so between the two sides, and plus, minus, minus, plus, and et cetera. Okay, so all of this is exact until now. You can do this even for ED and simply send it to a LAPACK routine. It will diagonalize the Hamiltonian for you. But now we want to perform truncation. So for that, we need ground state. And we use some routine to get the ground state. For the most, well, not most, but all the production level codes, we'll use some kind of power law, like Lang-Chow's, to give you the ground state. Because at some point, you will not be able to diagonalize the full Hamiltonian as you keep growing in system size. But I will not go into this because that deserves a whole lecture on its own. But you give it to some routine, you get the ground state, which should be a 16 size vector, right? Calculate the reduced density matrix of the left side and the right side, as we discussed before. You diagonalize it to get the eigenvectors of the reduced density matrix. And these are what we're going to use in order to rotate the new basis. So before, if you remember the Wilson's renormalization group, we used the eigenvectors of the Hamiltonian in order to perform the rotation. Here we're using eigenvectors of the reduced density matrix to perform the rotation. Another important difference is there, we use the lowest lying eigenstates, so the lowest energy eigenstates, to perform rotation. Here we want to use the highest energy eigenstates. Why highest? Because if you remember this profile, we want to look at the probability that is highest to keep the most information that is within the ground state, right? So you want to take the highest probabilities that is associated with some configuration to represent the ground state. So that's why understanding what the density matrix is important, because if you didn't understand, you will not understand the truncation part and why it works. Okay. So now we will keep only the highest energy eigenstates corresponding to eigenvalues of the reduced density. We will throw away part of it. So that's why I have m. Suppose we throw away two of them, then I will have a rectangular matrix which is m by 4, m by 4 for the left hand and right hand side also. And we do the same thing we did before in Wilson's renormalization. The way the truncation is performed is by doing these rotations of each operator. So you want to go to each operator in each block, which is originally 4 by 4 for two side systems. So you're going to have SC matrices and etc. for each block which are 4 by 4. And you will perform rotation like this. And here you can clearly see, if you contract over these two indices and these two indices, at the end of the day, you should have an M by N matrix. So that's how the rotation and truncation is performed. And once this is done, you're done for the most part. You add one side again to this new block and this new block with this new renormalized operators. And then you go back to step two. So you add side to the left and right. You combine to form super block Hamiltonian. You diagonalize to get the ground state. Form the reduced density matrix for left and right both. And then using the eigenvectors of the reduced density matrix, you rotate and truncate to new bases. All of you look lost. No?
How do I know the fact that you, what the state that you remove achieves the goal that you want to have, i.e. that you are assuming the distribution is almost exponential.
Right.
So I could have cases where I would have a second, the third eigenvalue is not that small for the density matrix.
Right.
So then what's the justification?
You have to measure the truncation error, that's right. So generally some scaling is done, right? So if I'm
not lucky, then I discover I need to keep, need to keep 4 or 5 eigenstates.
Right.
And then next time then again, so are there general rules saying that for certain classes then
But generally you want to keep more and more number of states and keep checking what's the error you have here. That's the way to do the scaling and make sure that you're accounting for enough information. But there are rules that tells you, even hand-wavingly, which systems would have problems here. Which systems would not have such an exponential decay and will more have a flat distribution here. Essentially, the more entangled the system, the more problematic this becomes. But I'll argue. So that was the end of infinite DMRG algorithm. Generally, you want to keep growing in infinite DMRG and stop at a certain predefined system size. And then you perform finite algorithm. I will not go into this, but it's very similar to what I have introduced, with a few extra strength. Again, it's in that book, but if I go through this, I think all of you guys will fall asleep. So,
the question is that here you just keep adding sites, and then what I would have thought, you start with the original Hamiltonian and then reduce the degrees of freedom, but here you use this scheme and try to build a new system, and then claiming that the new system you have is actually the original. It's a solution of the original system.
For Heisenberg model, you wanted to do 100 sites, right?
Yeah.
You can't keep adding sites because your Hilbert space will blow up. So while you add sites, you have to truncate because it's simply not possible with current computational resources.
No. It's, but that's not my question. My question is that this scheme, within the scheme, I build up a effective Hamiltonian. I add more and more sites, but then I build up the ground state. But how? So every time I have a Hamiltonian, Heisenberg like. But how do I guarantee that this Hamiltonian is the same as my original Hamiltonian? It's just not obvious to me.
It's renormalized consistently, and the only way to check is by measuring the error. You can also compare against known results from other ED population. But other than that,
Okay.
I don't know if there's a mathematical proof of that. It's like even in the original renormalization group theory, when you do the scale invariance problems, you continuously change the scale, but it's very, I'm not sure how to explain that.
Is it?
It's a we have the original Hamiltonian.
I thought now, in light of the current development of matrix product state, I think there are statements, there are proofs that the matrix product states can be, can, for a certain class Hamiltonian, can approach the exact results. And then there's also a connection between matrix product state and the density matrix realization.
Yeah.
As I understand. So there might be some theorem that's saying that, that under certain conditions, that this scheme is actually, if I do it sufficiently systematically, I may make it bigger, then
right,
et cetera, then
so,
one would be able to achieve
think
it.
About the limit I don't perform any truncation, right? If I perform no truncation, it's an exact method. So I'm keeping everything here and just rotating to new bases, which I can always do. Right, okay, yeah.
Actually, I have a question about, I mean, it's called the renormalization group. Usually when I think of renormalization group, right, you know, I'm doing some integration out procedure, I'm throwing away high move, you know, fast moving modes.
Right.
It seems that what's being renormalized here is that when I'm throwing things away, but what I'm throwing away is information sort of out of my density matrix, right? And sometimes this is a way of sort of keeping the biggest pieces of
right,
that.
That's right.
And I guess what I'm confused is all this same sort of logic we have about, you know, renormalization fixed points and, you know, the idea that if I stick a Hamiltonian in, it's, you know, it will sort of stay near somewhere,
right,
which is, I guess, what Jason was asking, but it's sort of, does it, is there like a notion of flow in the same way where, like, you know, if I do this enough times, if I, you know, throw out enough sort of irrelevant, I mean, is there even a notion of irrelevant in that, in the same sense? You know, I mean, like, how much of my intuition should carry over here? I guess. Let me be a little more precise.
Okay.
You know, there's irrelevant operators that become smaller under RG when we think about the field theory language, right? You know, there's the flow, but I can consult the ODEs by hand and
right,
and work out, you know, I can linearize, I can calculate scaling exponents, so on and so forth. Do any of those ideas have analogs here? I mean, is there some idea of like what an irrelevant part of my density matrix is?
I suppose, but it's very, I you know,
well,
when I think about that, I think of this pictorial representation where things are flowing to some fixed point, right?
Right.
Here it's hard to say that because these are matrices. They do get renormalized. They do get renormalized, and in certain class cases, it might happen that certain set of matrices just don't play any role. They go to zero, or the matrix elements inside them are very small.
Sort of like after truncating, like it doesn't change the physical
right,
measurement.
So,
okay, so there's so that's the notion of irrelevant.
Right. In that sense, it's a fixed point, but it's not same fixed point.
But you can in principle look at the density matrix and think, okay, well, these pieces are not that important for
right.
I actually do some observable. These pieces will be,
right,
you know, after repeated truncation will sort of not matter, or even after one truncation. Okay,
that's
so there's a notion of like irrelevancy, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, but it's not, generally people only look at the truncation error or do some kind of scaling, as you were saying, measure the spin-spin correlation with different number of states, or different error tolerance, and see when they stop changing. But there's not much other than that you can do.
Okay, so there's not like I can't do even some sort of like discretized plot all of my.
That's what I was thinking about, but I don't see how that.
Okay, so it's an normalizing, but it's not maybe the ordinary.
Right.
So we've got 15 minutes left. Normally I would stop and ask if anyone has questions, but people are already asking questions anyway, so I'll let Nirav keep going. And if you have questions, just feel free to ask.
So, Nirav, I have a question.
Yeah.
So, the density matrix that you start with is in terms of some basis that you've chosen initially, right?
Yes.
So, like, does it matter for, like, the purposes of your calculation, does it matter what basis you start with or
initial
no?
Initial basis?
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, in Heisenberg Hamiltonian, you can represented in SC basis, up, down, up, and up. Or you can go to SU2 basis. You can write it in terms of singlets and triplets.
Okay.
It's fine. Either one will work.
Yeah. One question. So it seems to me that you are doing some kind of perturbation theory, because you are assuming that the ground state like a smaller electron, so maybe we ask in the new term. So right. You say that the new ground state is like connected to this full ground state.
Not. It's not perturbation theory because you're not. There's no perturbation here. You're simply You're throwing away part of the information that you know is irrelevant to represent the ground state.
But it was irrelevant for the smaller system. How do you know when you add those new sites? Like maybe it becomes more and more relevant as you add sites.
That's the thing. You have to continually measure the truncation error and do many, many sweeping algorithms that you show it and make sure that it remains that way. So because there's a well-defined measure of error, you can always check that. Yeah. But it's not perturbation theory in that sense, because there is no small parameter here. In Hamiltonian, at least, there is no small parameter. You can work with very large U, very small U, or intermediate coupling as well. So there are many improvements that I did not go through here. Most of these are very important if you want to have a production level code, because the code I described will not work for more than a couple of sites, a few number of states. Once you need to implement matrix algebra, sparse matrix algebra, and there are packages that exist, Intel and Eigen libraries. I actually use Eigen in my code. One needs Lanczos and Davidson power law method in order to solve the ground state, because after the truncation, even after the truncation, the Hilbert space will remain very large. So when I have these kind of pictures, this was truncated to M state, this was truncated to M state. These are fresh sites, so locally it has two states per site. So the Hamiltonian will have a 4M square by 4M square matrix. Right? So if M is 1,000, you can see this is already an issue. So you need some kind of a power law method to solve the ground state. You cannot just give this to a diagonal like a LAPACK to exactly diagonalize. Of course, when you build your code first, you don't need to worry about it. Just work with small matrices and make sure that code is working. There's something called matrix vector multiplication on the fly. So within this algorithm, you need to repeatedly apply the Hamiltonian on the vector. Yeah, so if your Hamiltonian is very large, this operation will significantly slow you down, because your Hamiltonian is huge, even in its sparse format. So you never actually create the superblock Hamiltonian. You do the direct product between left, right, and the application onto the vector in one go in the code. So one more improvement. Then there's the wave function transformation or wave function prediction. Again, this is described in the book. But this is a way to predict the ground state for the next DMRG step. So if you give a good guess, then these power law methods will converge faster. And again, this is one more improvement that one should use. Then the quantum numbers. And finally, parallelization using multiple cores or multiple nodes. Essentially, anything below step 6 is probably only optional step. If you want to get to a code that is actually at production level, you need all of these. And if you're working with something like the Thai model where you have no symmetries, then you still need all four of these. So things get very complicated very quickly. Not because of the algorithm itself, but because what you need to optimize them. Now I'll come to the limitations here. DMRG works best for 1D and quasi-1D systems, so multiple leg ladder, but it becomes less and less efficient for higher dimension. And when I say less efficient, I mean, remember that DMRG is exact if you perform no truncation whatsoever, right? So less efficient meaning if you can keep 100,000 states, it will still work. But in some cases, 100,000 states might not be enough. So it depends on our numerical capability currently. Now, convergence can be difficult for gapless systems, and Hamiltonian with long range interaction, a hopping from site I to I plus 10, or something like that, are periodic boundary conditions, and I will get to why. Essentially, all of these will affect these exponential decay of profile. So if this profile has a problem, then DMRG will have a hard time with convergence. So exponential decay of that profile is good. Not an exponential decay is bad for DMRG. And this is essentially coming from the entanglement entropy. How much the partition A is entangled with partition B is what decides what this decay looks like. And there's one can vaguely measure the entanglement entropy just by looking at the connections in the Hamiltonian. Suppose you have a 2D lattice, and you want to make some partition like this. So you make a partition, and then you have to count the number of broken bonds that you create. In this case, this is a valence bond solid. So these black lines are singlets. So here we break multiple singlets on bond. So the entropy associated with this partition will be proportional to the number of broken bonds. The larger they are, the more this decay will be slower and slower. In 1D, you just have a chain. So if you make one cut, you're only breaking one bond, as long as you have connection between only near spheres. If you have connection that goes from here to here, and you make a cut here, then you would break. So the more the number of bonds that you break by making a partition, larger the entanglement entropy, and slower the decay of these profiles. And harder the DMRG will have, harder time DMRG will have with convergence. Because this truncation will become a problem, you need to keep more and more number of states to reduce the error. Okay, so now I'll quickly talk about some applications. This is the first paper by White. These two, who introduced DMRG. One of the first application he used this for is to measure this so-called Haldane cut in spin one chain. And he was able to measure the spin gap up to the fifth decimal place. Now I think we know it up to 12th decimal place. So this was analytical result. We knew that because of Haldane. And now we can check it numerically up to almost machine precision. And it's very large system. So here he goes up to 300 sites, keeping only 50 states or so. That is amazing. And also these edge states. So here he's measuring SZ, local SZ on each site of the spin one chain. And if you look at the boundaries here, the measure of SZ is 1/2 approximately on each site. So these are the real space measurement of these edge states. So this was one of the first applications that he made, the first two paper by him. So this is my work in my grad school. I applied DMRG to study pairing superconductivity in multi-orbital Hamiltonians. So this is multi-orbital chains. And here I'm looking at pair structure in real space of this chain. So I have a chain here with orbital A and orbital B. Orbitals are connected ferromagnetically. These are, so the red ones are positive spin-spin correlation, representing a ferromagnetic bond, and the blue are anti-ferromagnetic. And you can study how the spins behave around these holes that distort the original magnetic ordering, and try to understand pairs in real space, and how the electron form bound state. Here, I have bearing strength, some measure of bearing amplitude, as a function of parameter for various doping. And you see this dome-like behavior showing this bearing is largest for two holes, and then this dome kind of decays at a fixed U as you increase the hole doping.
What's D bar?
Excuse me?
What's the vertical axis D bar inclusion?
It's a measure of bearing amplitude. So the way I measure it, I just look at the correlation between two pairs in the central set of central sites and average over them. And finally, I did not go into dynamical DMRG. Of course, you can also do that. But here, I'm just showing you an example this is this paper is still in archive, and here I'm looking at something called orbital selective Mach insulator, where I'm plotting charge occupation of different orbitals A, B, and C for variety of electron filling. So at filling of 4, it has some special property. We're looking at a block magnetic phase, which is relevant for some selenite iron superconductor. But the point here is that if you notice, the charge occupation of C is remaining at 1, even when I hold up. So it's very stiff. All the holes or electrons that I'm doping are going directly to these other two orbitals, which are increasing linearly in hole doping. So this behaves very much like bands, where you add electrons and it simply fills the K states, while this is very much stiff, so representative of a Mach insulator. And I calculated corresponding single particle spectra here, kk of omega, which is measured in our physics experiments. And clearly we see a Mach gap here in orbital C, while these guys are gapless, or at least has a pseudo gap, it's not gapped. These is the corresponding charge dynamical structure factor. And in a Mach insulator, it should be gapped. In a metal, it should be gapped. So this is, I didn't get too much into physics, but the motivation here is just the algorithm itself. So we can do some very nice things here with 1D for quasi 1D 6 inches. All right, so I'll leave the conclusion at the thank you.
Great timing, we still have 3 minutes.
So what's the idea of doing time dependence using dynamics and doing kinematics?
There are various ways to do it. You're asking about the algorithm?
No, yeah, no. What's the idea, general idea?
There are various ways of doing the time dependence. One is the Suzuki Trotter, which is often used for doing time evolution in quantum Monte Carlo. You can also target more states in the density matrix. Instead of targeting the ground state, I can target some excited state. By targeting, I mean when you create the density matrix, you create it from ground state. You can also create it from some excited state. Right, so but there are various measures of this, but these are the two most common ones.
But how do I know that it is
correct?
So I don't accumulate errors as time goes on.
Right. So you can measure for the energy conservation. When you apply an excitation at time equal to 0, you have some energy that you introduce to the system because that was forcefully excited. And then you have to measure if there's change in that energy. So if you go significantly away from that energy of excitation, then you're accumulating error. You can also measure norm of the ground state. So there are ways to measure the error to make sure that you're not accumulating error then. And also, again, the truncation error is still there. That you can also measure.
Much more involved.
I would say probably conservation, energy conservation. You're not losing information. In theory, you should measure all three of them. Because it might vary from system to system. So, yeah, I think I didn't answer Tamanna's question, but as far as these sectors are concerned, the quantum numbers, suppose I was targeting a specific SE sector. Suppose I'm targeting SD equal to 0. That targeting only comes at the level of superblock, so when I create the full Hamiltonian. I don't create anything else, I only create that particular sector. But to create that sector, I need the full information here and here, in all the possible sectors, apart from some that I threw away. Right. So in this block and this yellow block, I still have a set of quantum numbers. They might not be complete because I threw some of them away, but I don't have to have only S equal to 0 quantum number. I have to keep everything here and here. Only at the level of creating the full system, you can target a specific quantum number.
So how do you know when you're throwing away, that you're not throwing away some contributions which would contribute to the SG that you're targeting.
Even if you were, because you do this sweep repeatedly, mm-hmm. and you're adding fresh states here, you will correct for that error. Even if you were doing that.
Right, so you will get the most likely value of SG, but the model that you have with 20 sites or a few number of sites, that model will not have SG conservation, or will it have SG conservation?
It will have SG conservation, it's just you threw away some of the states.
It's not complete.
It has
it
all
has
the, no, but the property as you do symmetry is property of the ground state, right? So
yeah.
If you do the operations, that will still be there. For example, if you measure, if you create a spin flip and measure, after creating a spin flip, you created some new state and you measure its local quantum number S, you will measure one. So that symmetry is still there. It's not that you threw it away.
Okay, it's 3:30, so the talk is officially over, but I'll hang out here if anybody has more questions, and I'll be down at coffee hour on the second floor if anybody wants to talk about Journal Club when we're done here.
This is a coffee hour.
Nah.